Welcome to Shit Your Teenagers Won't Tell You, a podcast about everything you need to know about teens.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm Meredith, and we speak teenager.
Did we also mention that we're best friends?
We've worked as admission officers, prep school administrators, and most importantly, have coached thousands of teens. In other words, we have seen it all.
So join us every week as we give you the lowdown on all the shit your teenager isn't telling you. Because trust us, there's a lot of it. And if you don't know what to do with the teenagers in your life, don't worry, we've got your back. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Shit Your Teenagers Won't Tell You. I'm here with Meredith, not in person, sadly, but it's Easter. We got things to do.
It's true. I've got food to eat.
I'm jealous.
I know.
What kind of food are you going to have?
Well, Herrera family gatherings, there's going to be someone will bring a ham. Then there will be probably someone's going to make like enchiladas or something. It'll be like a combination, what to say.
Delicious.
It's going to be good.
You can roll past my house and do a drop off, you know, just FYI.
Oh, that's true. I could on my way back. That's true.
Just saying. True.
The tequila will be a flowing.
Yum. Well, I'll pass on the tequila, but I will happily take a honey bay ham or enchiladas.
Would literally die if I gave you a shot of tequila. You would literally combust.
That is facts. I don't drink, everybody. For those of you out there, I got the severe Asian glow. So severe that I can't drink. It's not for me. And it's fine.
It's healthier.
And I'm still festive. So there we go. Fun facts about us this morning. So we're going to do an episode. So let's talk about the actual episode we're going to talk about.
I know. We're just like staring at each other. I was thinking about how festive you were. And then I had a sort of historical film reel of times where Kathy's been festive going playing in my head. That's why I was quiet.
I'm festive. It was really fun. So, okay, one more side note. My best friend from seventh grade, who I've known for 30 years of my life, she pulled up our old middle school yearbook.
Oh my God.
And found my note to her, my autograph.
Yes. What is it?
Yearbook signing. Oh my God. It was hilarious. She's like, you are still exactly the same. She's like, you write cards the same way. I was like, I really do. I'm like, hey, girl. I didn't say hey, girl back then, but the essence of it was like, hey, girl. Hope you have a great summer. Good luck with the boys next year. Can't wait to see your pearly whites.
Oh, my gosh.
When you get your braces off. K-I-T. And then I signed.
I was just going to ask if you
K-I-T, signed. Which Aiden, my partner, was like, who's younger? Goes, what does KIT mean? Stop. I was like, you are, yes, because he was born in 86. Okay. Like, he doesn't know that whole era of KIT, BFF. I
mean, it's not like,
yeah, I know.
He's not that much younger than me. And I, okay, whatever.
But he's a boy and he's stupid. So, he's, anyway, I signed it Kathy Chen. Love ya.
Did Kathy you put Chen. Like Kathy Chen? Third row math class.
No, I was just like so many exclamation points, lots of enthusiasm.
Did you put hearts above the eyes?
I didn't put hearts above the eyes, but in my later years, instead of writing out love ya, I will sign with a heart. Love. Heart. Yeah. Hearts, heart, Kathy. Yeah. I dropped the Chen at some point. I didn't feel the need to sign Kathy Chen. It's funny because if you look, most people are just like, KIT, have a great summer, Meredith. No, not me. I'm like Kathy Chen, just so you know.
Just so you know.
Don't get confused. There's only 12 people in our class, but whatever. Anyways, hilarious. So today we're actually going to talk about extracurriculars because it's almost summer and we're talking to kids a lot about resumes and what you do with your time and this, that, and the other thing and how important. Oh, and I also watched full credit to College Essay Guy because we're going to reference a talk that I watched with one of his folks about just highly selective admissions and extracurriculars was one of the slides. And I was like, oh, we got to talk about extracurriculars. Mm-hmm. Because something I don't think we've said on the show before is that extracurriculars are not as important as you think. It's not that they're not important, but I think people overemphasize the importance. So I'll work with a lot of kids, and I don't know if you feel this way too, Meredith. I have a lot of kids I work with, and they're like, I need to pad my resume for college. I need to do these things for college. And I'm like, that's really the wrong attitude. You can do things because you know it's important for college. I wouldn't do it for college. I would do things that you like to do because it's an important use of your time and it's in line with your interests, knowing that, oh, great. And it's also something I can put on my college resume, right? It's something meaningful that I spend my time on. And it doesn't have to be formal. That's a misconception. Anyways, I won't go there just yet because we're going to have some examples and things like that on this episode. But what do you think about that, Merrick? What else would you add about the extracurricular conversation, or what do you think about what I've said so far?
Well, as per usual, because we share a brain, I agree. I do think that we need to address the elephant in the room, which is that we get asked to, it's funny to me, you know, I'm listening to you talk and we always talk about making decisions from a value-centered place, from an authentic place of identity construction, development, et cetera. And yet still, when push comes to shove, I know I work with a lot of students and a lot of parents who feel like, okay, yeah, that's nice philosophically, but no, really, tell me what I need to do.
Yeah.
Tell me what to do. And so that's also the energy. It's also an energy of, I need to curate my co-curricular profile just for college. So that's one thing that I think we both agree is not the right approach. But then the second is this unwillingness to discover things for self and looking to experts like you and me to just be like, tell me the program, tell me the formula. And that also is the wrong attitude and unrealistic. I mean, apart from it just being sort of philosophically misaligned to how you and I do college counseling, it's also just like not possible. So I agree. I mean, I think when everyone is believing that you have to do X, Y, and Z to get into a highly selective college, then that what that means is that everyone's going to look the same as they apply to that college. And I'll just speak from my time in admission. I wanted students who demonstrated earnestness in the application and who
authenticity.
I didn't care with. Yeah, for sure. And I could tell. And I wanted students who geeked out on something, and it could be one or two things. It didn't have to be 10 things. And I wanted to hear how they talked about that. And you could always tell, you know, who was doing that because it was something really interesting to them. And they were kind of just lit up by learning. And who was doing it because they felt they were supposed to. Doing something because you feel like you're supposed to is not the energy you want to bring to the college application.
Yeah, well, and I think that the activity summary or your resume provides evidence for the things that you say you're interested in and who you say you are. So when it gets overly curated by somebody who isn't you, it really comes across. It just, I don't know how to explain it. You have to have read thousands of applications to really understand how nuanced that is and understanding that. Like, how can an admissions person sniff that out? I don't know. We just can't. We have a spidey sense for it over time. And so like when we coach, we are really trying not to pick things for kids. We definitely brainstorm with them like different ideas and things to do. So I'll give an example with a student that I'm working with right now who's a junior who I love, and she's really sweet. And the things that she loves to do is she really loves music, and she loves chamber music in particular. And she likes playing with her chamber orchestra, and she's doing a lot of orchestra camps over the summer, even though she doesn't want to do music performance in college. She's not going to apply to music school, but she just loves music. And, you know, there's a lot of concern, like, should she do that? Is that boring? And I was like, no, girl, do your music. You love it. Yeah. She went to a classical music concert with an artist that she really likes who I've never heard of. But she's like, do you know who he is? And I was like, no. She's like, oh, my God, I got to take a photo with him. And it was so exciting. And I was like, okay, that's cute. Adorable. And you really do love classical music because you're fangirling over this guy I've never heard of. He's like a violin player, whatever. The point is, like, she genuinely loves it. So there was a lot of like hemming and hawing about whether or not that was the right thing to do with her summer. And I was like, of course it is. She loves doing that. is somebody going to look at that and be like, holy shit, that's the most unique thing I've ever seen in my life? I'm like, no, it's not.
Right. Which is right.
But that's okay. You know, and so we were also, how I was helping her think about it, other ways to think about stretching yourself this summer related to music, like maybe you could find ways to be a camp counselor at a music camp or volunteer somewhere. So like taking your interest out into the community, right? Sharing it beyond the walls of your school, beyond the walls of your orchestra. How could you extend yourself a little bit, stretch? Or how could you grow different interests? So another thing she loves to do is doodle. She has taken art classes, but that's not her interest. She likes to draw cartoons, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, that's awesome. You should look into like taking a comic book class this summer or drawing, mm-hmm. make your own comic book or graphic novel or make a collection of your doodles and put them online and or make an Instagram for your doodles. Like, who knows? You could do all sorts of things just to share it with the world and people yeah. could look at them and just get joy out of it. That's fine. I don't think it has to be, oh, you went and studied with some blah, 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 and did this really impressive, you know, like got your thing printed. It's like, I don't.
I mean, a lot of the conversations I've been having the last couple of years have been like, well, what's going to be the final deliverable? What's going to be the final product? And I want to say personal development. I mean, that needs to be good enough for a 15 and 16 year old. It doesn't, they don't have to be a published author. They don't have to invent anything. They don't have to start a nonprofit. And you said something earlier that I think is so important. There's two points I want to make. One is this concept of doing something unique. Abandon that idea. It's very unlikely that a student is going to come up with an idea that a college admission officer hasn't already seen in some way, shape, or form. The unique thing that that student develops or this area of interest, it's just simply the admission counselor has too big a sample size that they're working from. So their frame of reference is humongous. So even if it's not about being unique. Most of us don't care about that, didn't care about that at all. Which begs the more meaningful question of what is the purpose of extracurricular activities? And you mentioned one earlier about demonstrating, you know, kind of walking your talk. If you say you're interested in art, do you have anything art-oriented around your co-curricular profile? But the other part of extracurriculars is about qualities and characteristics that they foster and illustrate. It's not about the what, it's about the who and the why. And so what you do in soccer or volleyball or going on an outdoor education trip or film production or equestrian, whatever, is less important than why you do it. And so when I was looking at a student's co-curricular profile, when I worked in admissions, what I'm trying to assess is, who's this kid? What qualities and characteristics? Do they show dedication? Do they show persistence? Do they show curiosity? Are they inquisitive? You know, these are the kinds of qualities I know they're going to need to be successful in college. And so extracurricular activities are a way for a student to demonstrate deeper qualities and characteristics that matter. And so pick the thing that demonstrates those qualities and characteristics. It doesn't matter what it is as much as people think it does.
I agree. And I'll also say we are talking in the context of highly selective admissions. There are plenty of schools that actually don't care at all what your resume looks like. So let's be very clear. And when we say highly selective, we're saying like less than a 25% admit rate, like schools. And when we go down to like single digits, you know, single digit admit rate schools, the uber rarefied air highly selective schools, they are seeing everything. And ultimately, the kids who are the students who are going to be most competitive for those schools actually don't need an admissions person or a counselor to tell them what to do because they are naturally curious. Right. They are motivated. They are dedicated. They have tons of bandwidth. They are disciplined. Like, they pretty much just do their thing.
They're self-driven.
They're self-driven, and that's the reality of when we're talking about single-digit admit rate kids. I have a kid this year who got into Yale early. You know what? I make a suggestion to her, and she's like, yeah, I think I will look into that. That's a really great idea.
and then she does it. She does the research. She sends the emails. She doesn't require prompting.
Totally. And then she takes the ball, and then she just grows it.
right? She does even more with it. She's like, oh, yeah, this was such a great opportunity. And I took it and I did this and that and the other thing. And quite frankly, the worst thing, so I think about my Yale girl this year. So the one thing that she did that she thought was kind of lame is Clark Scholars, which is like a super duper selective research, 6 week long. Like, it is intensive. You are working in a laboratory for 8 hours every day with a graduate student and maybe a professor, but mostly grad students, right? Yeah. At a university doing lab work. And she was like, I was like, do you want to write about Clark Scholars? Like, as one of your, you know, for one of your supplements about a extracurricular activity that was interesting. She's like, no, because it was so boring. I was like, that's awesome. I was like, maybe I love that.
And I think that's so important. So if you're a parent who's just finding that you're constantly nudging, then you don't have that kind of kid right now. And there needs to be some acceptance around that. You know, the self-directed kids are going to show up in that way. And they often find, you know, there's a reason. It's okay that not all kids are the same. I want to give another example because I think it's a great example of initiative, because I think that's what you're kind of describing. The kids who are really successful at highly, highly selective schools pretty much always show and exhibit initiative. They don't need a lot of prodding academically, co-curricularly. They kind of got there. They just do.
Yeah.
So I have another student who just got into Barnard, which is awesome and definitely a reach, but she has a younger brother who's autistic. Very severely autistic. And so she has done a lot of work over the years, just learning to manage her brother. Like, how do I exist in public with this person who can dysregulate so easily? And, you know, she's done some volunteering, she's done some camps. And one of the things she's learned from her life experience is that the resources available for kids like him, and also some students with like profound learning differences, they're few and far between. There's a lot of inequity in that. That's very expensive. And so she wanted to figure out a way this past summer to get more involved in sort of advocacy. And I was like, great, that sounds awesome. You can't Google high school student program working with autistic advocacy. You know, like, that's not a thing that exists. That's something she had to create. And so we looked at different community organizations. We thought, well, what are some counseling organizations that like have a child development program? And she emailed a ton of people and she made phone calls and she didn't need me. She needed some help crafting an email here and there to make sure it sounded professional, but she didn't need me to sort of constantly nudge her. And she created this really beautiful set of experiences for herself over the summer. And that connected so powerfully to how she wrote about herself and her journey through high school, because her experience with her brother was very formative for her. It's turned her into, I think, you know, she's so compassionate. And so there's depth there and real critical thinking that she's showing.
Yeah.
And it's not this prepackaged, everything's laid out, everything's figured out for you program that's just plug and play. And I think that's something that is important for folks listening. You know, some of those programs are great. I think they're great for younger kids in high school because it gives them some exposure. But as students mature in high school, it's important that they start creating things.
Absolutely. I think that there's a whole, you know, in one of our Bone to Pick episodes where you and I are like, this is so freaking annoying. Like, one of the things that we find really annoying is these companies that are sprouting up everywhere, connecting students with research opportunities, with professors, college professors. And if you're a college professor, stop saying yes. I don't know how much they're paying you, but like, knock it off, because it's really not helping the admission situation. Like, these pay-to-play programs, people know. Colleges,
yeah, you're not keeping it a secret. Like, when we worked in admission, we knew how much summer programs at our university cost.
Correct. Or like pre-college programs. Just because you go to Brown Summer School, Harvard Summer School, like, yes, it's Harvard, I know. But it's also like, we know that they're also just trying to make money. And those programs are not an indication that you're somehow so much more prepared than 90% of our applicant pool. I don't think that's true. Tons of kids will do. That's not a knock on pre-college programs. There's a role for pre-college programs. But if you're looking at it like an opportunity to be like, oh, this is going to set me apart yeah, it's going to set me apart from other applicants. It's not going to do that. And the pay-to-play stuff is just, it's kind of icky. I don't like it. I've actually heard of, I was working with a student on life coaching and not college coaching, and he had a separate college coach he was working with. And I was like, oh, do you know what you're doing this summer? And he's like, yeah, I've got this internship set up. And I was like, oh, cool. What's your internship with? And he's like, oh, this company. And I was like, how did you get it? Did you like, he's like, oh, I'm working with an agency that just connects, my college counseling agency just sets it up for me. And I was like, awesome. Like, and that's so annoying. Like, to, I didn't say anything to the kid, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, ew. That is so antithetical to everything that I believe and value about the college admissions process.
I know.
And, you know, quite frankly, when kids are being packaged like that, I'm sorry. I just don't think it resonates. It doesn't look good. I'd rather a kid who doesn't want to do anything during the summer, I'd rather him just like go get a job. Like, okay, great. You don't want to do anything this summer. Guess what? You're volunteering. Guess what? Yeah. You're going to volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club for X many hours per week. You're going to go bag food at Second Harvest. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, you don't get to sit in your room and do nothing, but whatever. Go to work at Target. Like, I don't care. Like, just go get a job.
Do something hard. I mean, I think that that's also, I think part of what irks me about when we have conversations about this and you say, you give me anecdotes like the one you just gave that would annoy the crap out of me as well. I think what irks me is the lack of resilience and grit that it demonstrates. You know, the way that Village works and the values that you founded the company around are not for everyone. I mean, we don't do college counseling the way that some college counselors approach it, private college counselors. And it's not transactional, and it's really about authentic identity development and match and values. And so one of the things that I believe deeply in, and I know you share this opinion, is that the reason, part of why I'm doing this work isn't to help X kid get into X college. Part of why I'm doing this work is because I want to develop, help a kid grow into like a good, resilient adult. And this is a vehicle to build certain skill sets and habits of mind. And as a child development expert, I know that one of the things that will put someone in good stead for life is having grit and resilience and being able to take a risk that's healthy. One level is it's just annoying. I think families overestimate the impact of those kinds of prepackaged, curated programs, the pay-to-play stuff. It doesn't really work. It doesn't really have the result you want. But the other reason why I think it's actually kind of detrimental is that it stunts development. It stunts growth. Like, all we're doing is reinforcing that.
You don't know what you're doing.
Everything. Yeah. You're telling your kid you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing.
I don't trust you to figure it out. You
can't figure it out.
Yep.
I won't normalize that figuring it out, like the process of figuring something out, comes with fits and starts, comes with failure. And we're just like not going to let that happen because it's quote unquote too high stakes. And so what that kid internalizes is everything needs to be easy. And so their tolerance for things that are harder, take longer, is weak.
Yeah.
And I think you and I see that all the time in the students that we work with.
Right. And I also, for the parents who are listening, it's actually not as high stakes as you think it is.
It's really not.
It's really the resume is really not as high stakes. Truly the most important thing is a transcript. And what you're doing day in and day out for 5 days a week, usually 7 because you got homework over the weekend, but like that's usually way more important.
Yeah.
The resume, an impressive resume is never going to overcome a mediocre transcript. I don't care. I literally don't care if you have created a nonprofit that's raised $50,000. If you are a B student and you're applying to a highly selective college, I'm not going to be like, oh, but you did this thing. That's so impressive.
Yeah.
No. I mean, maybe if you are like one of the rare instrument, maybe if you're one of the best.
Talent. I think if there's talent, right? Like sports, music.
Xylophone players.
Performance-based majors portfolios, but that's the equivalent of their transcript. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a different thing. That's different than just coming in, applying to highly selective college and being like, but you know what? I'm going to pad the shit out of my resume to make up for the fact that I haven't, I haven't taken hard classes and I haven't gotten A's. Not going to happen. Sorry. Hate to be the bearer of bad news. The one other point I wanted to make about the resume and like my theory behind why I think people are so hyper-focused on it, and parents in particular, is because it's maybe one piece of the application they really feel like they have control over.
Yeah.
Whereas every other piece of the application they don't have control over, right? Their kids are really in control of how they do in school. I mean, you can hire them a cadre of tutors, don't get me wrong, and plenty of people do. And you can hire people to write your kids' essays. Quite frankly, there are companies out there who are shady AF and will do that, right? Mm-hmm. Or just rewrite, like take what your kid's written and edit it so it, quote unquote, sounds good, sounds smart, which is, we've talked about this probably ad nauseum. We don't need to talk about it again.
There's probably four other episodes on that one.
Yeah. I was like, the authenticity piece again, people, like we can smell it. We're like, that doesn't smell right. A bunch of kids from the school, their essays all sound the same. That's weird.
Oh, boy. Oh, can I tell a funny story?
Yes.
When I worked at my previous very highly selective prep school, there was a private college counselor in the area that some of our families worked with. And this was just when I started, like in my first year. So I didn't really know this person. I had sort of heard in the wind that this person existed. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And I've never been a college counselor that feels threatened by that. I'm mostly just like, well, make sure they're qualified. Make sure they've actually worked in an admission office before you spend tons of money. So anyway, I'm just minding my own business. And we're getting to the part of the year where essays are coming in for me to review. And I look at one and I read it. From one kid, I'm like, and I don't like it. I don't like it because it doesn't sound like, I know this kid, it doesn't sound like them. It's very somber. It's heavy. It's sort of like this tortured soul searching. It's like, who's this kid? And so I basically say, what's this? This isn't you. Who wrote this? I really did. I was like, who wrote this? Because this is not you. And, you know, so that's how I first learned of this person, because they had a very, very heavy hand in editing and a very prescriptive. Well, I didn't know this part. So I was just like, wow, that's really heavy handed editing. Here are my thoughts, blah, blah, blah. I shared it with the family. Okay, cool. Whatever. Another essay comes in. And I'm like, I literally remember checking the email to make sure I didn't pull up the previous one because it was almost identical. And I had about four or five separate students working with this one individual. And all of their essays were the same.
Yeah.
They followed the same format. They sounded the same. The tone was the same. The diction was the same. By the way, none of the diction was theirs. And I had to have a tough conversation with each of those parents. I said, listen, this is crap.
Totally. Like,
this is a bad, first of all, on its merits, it's a bad essay. It's not answering the prompt. It doesn't sound like a 17 or 18 year old wrote it. It's so tortured. I'm depressed as hell.
Right.
Like, it's awful. But I digress. I just think it speaks to choice, right? There is a choice to be made on a very fundamental level in this process. When you have a child entering this process, you're going to be pressured from all kinds of directions to make choices that are in the authentic interest of your your child's holistic development, or make choices that are playing the short game that someone is telling you are the boxes you must check if you want your kid to get into X college. And therein lies the choice, where we would say, anchor that decision in your values as a family, in who you want your kid to be at 35, not at 20. And manage the anxiety that that's going to bring up for you.
Yeah.
But that's a choice, right? If you don't choose that, if instead you choose the path of curation, where everything is sort of laid out for your child, they don't really have anyone else in their life is sort of doing more labor to create the summer program than they are. I mean, you know, you and I don't believe that that's actually going to have the outcomes that you want it to.
Right.
Because typically in the end, an admission counselor can tell.
Yeah. There's a great book called Excellent Sheep.
Yes.
You should read it. And I think in higher ed, a lot of the complaints of colleges and professors, they're seeing too many students who are overly achievement oriented and not learning for the sake of learning, doing things to check a box, looking for the next rung of the ladder that they can climb, right? And it's a little, they feel soulless in some ways, you know? And schools don't like that. Actually, professors don't like to teach kids like that. You know, they want students who are clear about their values and their purpose and what they're doing in the world and the contribution they have to make to their communities. Anyways, that's to me what the resume is about. The extracurricular list is to figure out, how do I demonstrate my values? And I want to share this extracurricular activities list from the College Essay Guy presentation that I watched, because I think there's some cool, uncommon activities, and nothing on this list is pay to play. Everything on this list is just authentic. And when you hear these examples, you're kind of like, oh yeah, that's really cool. Nobody's going to Google that and it's going to pop up. Right? This comes from the intersection of values, skills, and intention, right? So kids came up with these. So here's my list, okay? An art program to empower teens with disabilities. A student-run podcast all about ants.
That's hilarious. How much do you have to say about ants?
Apparently a lot.
I love that.
Bringing portable solar panels to individuals experiencing homelessness. Doing oral interviews with neighbors in Koreatown in LA and sharing the family histories on a self-designed website. Investigating algorithmic oppression in body cameras and collaborating with the police department to implement more equitable tech.
Ooh, I love that one.
Right? Digital art Instagram around body positive and self-love collaborations with local artists. President/founder of school's birdwatching club. Advocating for project-based learning across Vermont public schools with administrators. Working as an administrative assistant at her mom's holiday parade business, interviewing circus performers, processing paperwork, etc. I want to interview circus performers.
Totally.
What skills are you looking for in a circus performer exactly? And then this is something I've never actually heard of. There's all sorts of things. One of the things that I learned about in admissions work is I read an essay about LARPing, live action role play. And a kid talking about how he liked to LARP. And I was like, what's, I had to Google it.
You're like, excuse me?
So this isn't one I've never heard of. ROM hacking, i.e. editing video games for different gameplay than the original.
Oh.
Who knew? Okay.
Who knew?
That's the thing. So this is an awesome list. That's why I wanted to do this episode, because I was like, I really want to share this with our listeners, because it's just a list of really cool, different, and not all of them are so hard. It's like, could you found a bird watching club? That's not so like labor intensive. You just take an interest you like and bring it to your community.
Yeah.
You're like, bird watching is awesome. More people should bird watch.
Yeah. I mean, I was having a conversation with a student who really is interested in foreign languages, and it's awesome. And it's, you know, there's going to be some time spent continuing to deepen their skill in the foreign language of their choice, which I think is really valuable. And then we were having this really fun and interesting conversation of like, okay, and now how can you apply that? How can you be in service? How can you use the things that you love, that you find interesting and compelling, and share that with other people or share that with your community in some way? And it's not a dramatic pivot for this kid, you know, it's just a little bit of a turn to think in that way. And, you know, he's coming up with some great ideas. That's great.
Exactly. So anyways, I know we're running out of time, but I want parents to walk away from this episode really feeling like the resume isn't the end all be all. Even though it's the one piece that you really feel like you've got a lot of control and can drive, it actually matters less than you think. And a lot of the times, like when parents have ideas for what their kids should be doing, they're kind of lame. Sorry, parents, but it's almost always get an internship at my company, whatever. But it's like, that's boring. We know that you're dad is the CEO of this company. And trust me, because I'm going to Google it and find out. Yeah. I oftentimes do that, where I'll be like, oh, what company did you – who's this company? How do you know this company? And also, if it's in the industry that you're one of your parents is in, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's fine. And if you're genuinely interested in it, okay, fine. But also, maybe –
yeah, but if the reason it's getting done is because parents are feeling such anxiety about something has to happen and it's the easiest thing for the kid, it requires no effort from the kid, then that's probably a big fat clue that it's the wrong activity.
Right.
It's okay for them to take time and struggle.
Yep.
And if they can't figure it out, don't set them up with some cush internship. Go make them get a job.
Yep. Agree. Totally agree.
Problem solved.
Let your kids suffer a little. Let them struggle through it. I think that's okay. I think it's good for them. And also the internship or job or whatever means so much more when kids find it themselves, when they figure it out, when they do the networking and they like talk to different people and use their resources to figure it out. I don't want to figure it out for you. And I really
– I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think that it's an appropriate thing.
Yeah. Agree. Shockingly, I agree.
We agree?
Mm-hmm.
That's surprising. Weird. I mean, it's been like, I don't know, when was the last time we disagreed? Like 2004?
Oh, I don't know if we've ever disagreed, to be honest.
I was trying to think. I was like, have we ever disagreed?
Maybe about some choices in the people we've dated over the last 30
years. Yeah. I was going to say, sometimes you make fun of my clothes.
That's true. We disagree the most when Meredith and I go shopping and I'm like, no.
And I just want to like buy more athletic wear. And she's like, could you please buy some real clothes? And I'm like, I don't want to. I need soft pants.
I only want to buy athletic wear and dangly Mexican looking earrings. Does it have turquoise? Yes, I like it.
Hey, that's just, I don't know what to say about that one.
Like, you're like, but I like those earrings.
That's like, you know, in the DNA. I'm not sure I can change that one. You have a fair complaint on my other part.
Anyways, that's our
love
episode.
Love me for who I am.
I do love you for who you are, but I do think you could dress nicer.
That's fair. She's not wrong.
Anyways,
happy Easter, everyone. I'm sure this will come out later, obviously.
Obviously. Okay. Anyways, thanks for listening, and we will see you with another episode very soon.